Dr. Keith Tanzi, MD, PhD, is an associate professor in the departments of neurology and physiology at Emory University School of Medicine, where he carries out his basic science research and is an attending physician in the spinal cord injury clinic at the Atlanta VA Medical Center, where he sees patients. Dr. Tanzi also conducts human research work in the Hulse Spinal Cord Injury Lab at Shepherd Center. He is board certified in neurology, spinal cord injury medicine, and neural repair and rehabilitation. Thank you for being our guest, Dr. Tanzi. What is the process for treating spinal cord injuries?
Original injuries are usually taken care of at trauma centers, and then patients go to inpatient rehabilitation. But there are so many aspects of medical care after someone has had a spinal cord injury that the VA has decided that the best way to care for this is to have all of the care that spinal cord injury patients get be under one roof. So in the spinal cord injury clinic system, we take care of all the medical problems, not only neurological, but all the other issues that come up. So there is pain, there is spasticity, there is rehabilitation equipment needs like wheelchairs and walkers and that sort of thing. But there's also managing bowel function, bladder function, skin care, bone health, a wide variety of things that are all impacted by people who have had spinal cord injury and a resultant paralysis.
Sounds like you need quite a team for this.
So at the Atlanta VA, there is another physician who's an internist and myself, a spinal cord injury medicine board certified neurologist. But we also have one of the best case managers that I've ever worked with in spinal cord injury and two nurses and a nurse practitioner that are fabulous with our patients covering all these bases.
How do you begin treating veterans with spinal cord problems and how often do you see them?
The assessment process is done in collaboration with the VA in Augusta. The way the VA spinal cord injury system is set up, there are hubs and spokes, and the hubs are where inpatient rehabilitation or hospitalization can occur. And that hub for us in this area is in Augusta. We are one of the spokes, so patients who live in Atlanta will go to Augusta once a year for an annual exam. But all the problems that come up in between, whether it's a bed sore or a bladder infection or needing a flu shot or having some problem develop with pain or a fall or something like that, we'll get to see. So I have some patients I see once a year, alternating about every 6 months when they are seen in Augusta because they're doing very well and they have no ongoing problems and we just need to check in and have an annual physical. Then there's other folks who only come to see us in between those times, you know, with an acute problem. And then I have some other folks that really need more frequent care. Every 2 to 3 months, we're trying to adjust medications or deal with some ongoing medical problem that they need help with.
What are the primary causes of spinal cord injuries?
Well, the big offenders are usually motor vehicle crashes, although falls are also a big cause. We have some traumatic injury due to violence, and occasionally people who have been injured either doing athletic activities or because of involvement they had in the military prior to their becoming a veteran.
Please tell us about your spinal cord research at the Shepherd Center.
So we're very interested in our group at trying to figure out how to make the nervous system that remains after the spinal cord injury function in the best way possible. Not all paralysis is complete. Not all neurological dysfunction is maximal. There is some ability for the remaining nervous system to be treated to function better. So we have both basic science work and human work trying to figure out how to get better restoration of neurological function out of our patients. In the human work, we're studying how the nervous system changes to help recover walking in patients that don't have complete paralysis, have some ability to move their limbs, but not an ability to walk. We can use locomotor training. We have a robotic device at the Shepherd Center we can train patients in, and we're examining how it is that the nervous system changes so that that recovery of walking can come about. We're also using a new technology to try to augment that, something called transcutaneous spinal cord stimulation, where we're providing some additional excitation to the neural circuitry in the spinal cord to see if that, along with the feedback the patient is getting from the movements of their legs, is enough to improve their ability to walk or improve their ability to walk better.
What is the difference in the work done at the Shepherd Center and what's done at Emory?
the Basic Science Laboratory over at Emory studies the same processes of neuroplasticity, how the nervous system could change after injury. But these are more fundamental questions about how the nervous system is changing in terms of how pain signals are being processed in the injured spinal cord. Pain after spinal cord injury is a big deal in lots of patients. And some of that pain simply comes from the injury to the nervous system. It's not necessarily that the foot's hurting. It's the nerves from the foot are trying to communicate with the brain, and they can't do so normally. So we study that in rodents, and we also study the effect of pain on the autonomic nervous system, control of blood pressure and heart rate. And this can be a critical clinical problem. Patients with pain who have severe injuries can have something called autonomic dysreflexia, where a little bit of pain stimulus, like a distension of the bladder or a skin wound or an ingrown toenail even, can cause blood pressures to shoot high enough up that there could be a risk for a heart attack or stroke. So we need to learn a little bit more about what's going on in the nervous system to cause those problems. And hopefully what we're learning in the animal lab we can translate to future human studies.
What kind of success have you seen?
Well, we have a fair number of patients who are motor incomplete, that is, they have some movement below the level of injury, recover the ability to walk over ground with locomotive training. This isn't true for all patients, but we're trying to figure out what is necessary and sufficient to be able to achieve this, and if for those patients that we can't achieve it with the traditional rehabilitation, if we can add this new technique of spinal cord stimulation and bring those folks along as well.
Why do veterans seek your help if they need it?
Well, I think a big part of spinal cord injury is dealing with the disability portions of it, the way this impacts people's daily living. To need care, to have risk for secondary medical complications because of paralysis. If patients were up and able to walk around and we had repaired how the nervous system functioned a little bit after injury, we might avoid some of the problems of pressure wounds and, problems with control of bowel and bladder and even this autonomic nervous system. And if many of these things were not troubling our patients, they would have more time that they could spend in pursuits of education or career, spend better time with their family and rely less on others.
What do you hope to accomplish with this research?
The ultimate goal is to see about rewiring or reconnecting the nervous system. Think about the spinal cord as being both a conduit of a lot of signals, but also some nerve centers that carry out things like movements or processing of sensory information. And the problem is this disconnect between the brain and that neural circuitry in the spinal cord. So the spinal cord below the level of an injury still gets the same amount of sensory feedback, but not as much communication from the brain. And it now has to figure out how to use this new combination of inputs to function. And so we can trick it a little bit by changing what that sensory feedback is and getting a little bit better output. The ultimate goal would be to reconnect the brain and the spinal cord as originally designed. But short of that, there's a lot of potential left for learning. I don't know whether you can juggle or ride a unicycle right now, but I bet you with a bunch of practice, I could, teach you how to do those things. And the same is true for the neural circuitry that's left after an injury. With training, we can get that circuitry to do things that it didn't know that it could do ahead of time. And this is true not only for spinal cord injury, but for traumatic brain injury and for stroke as well.
Mm-hmm.
So neural rehabilitation is a big area of research in hopes of improving the function.
What about helping those with complete paralysis?
There is a bigger problem in dealing with people with what we call clinically complete injuries. That is that there is no voluntary movement or perception of touch or pain below the level of the spinal cord injury. But using some electrophysiological techniques that really carefully look at signals crossing the level of the injury, we can find that about 2/3 of the patients who are clinically complete spinal cord injuries actually have some connections and actually have some abilities left over to modulate function on either side of the injury. So the hope is to even in those patients that we'll be able to do some aspects of repair. Of course, these are the patients that will need the restorative therapies, whatever may come of stem cell work or other things like that, to more fully repair the nervous system before we can get a lot of functional recovery. But there's some new and interesting technologies out there. There are now 3 companies with robotic exoskeletons that can be strapped on to patients, and they can walk around in their environment with those devices. And at this point, they've mostly been used as substitution devices. They're the equivalent of a wheelchair, except that the patient's able to walk with them. This isn't really restoring function in the nervous system, but it's restoring function in the person and how they can get about. And, of course, these companies are interested in finding out what the limits of their equipment are and whether in patients with some function, whether they can improve that. It's hard to beat a wheelchair. Getting from point A to point B on wheels is a pretty efficient solution. It's when you get to where you're going, getting up into the cabinet over the sink, that's the tougher bit. So this is where those exoskeletal devices might come into play.
Older veterans will understand this question. How close are we to a practical version of the $6 million man?
Well, I think there's some very interesting technology being investigated for interactions between the nervous system and external devices. There is one company that has tapped into recording signals from the brain and then using those to control devices in the environment for people with paraplegia. And one thing that's envisioned is that perhaps you could record a desired movement from the brain and then stimulate the spinal cord as if it was connected to the brain and then have those movements come about. Now, of course, there's hope for biological solutions. Using a variety of methods in rodent models, we can get tens to hundreds of nerve fibers to regrow millimeters to centimeters beyond the level of the injury in these animals. In humans, we need to scale that up quite a bit. We need tens to hundreds of thousands of nerve fibers, making it, if your injury is in your neck and you want to control your legs, they may have to grow half a meter. So it's a matter of scale, and we're not yet at the point where what we've learned to do in the rodent can be translated to the human, but there's hope that we can get there.
Is stem cell research being used, and what benefits can be found with it?
Yeah, there are several stem cell trials that have taken place, and some that are in the planning stages. There's a currently active trial going on in Europe, run by the company Stem Cells, Inc., and there's a variety of ways in which stem cells may provide some benefit. They may provide chemical signals that allow for greater plasticity in the nervous system that remains. In other words, better growth and reconnections and making new connections with the circuitry that remains. That's probably the lowest level of help they could provide. It's possible that they could provide insulation to the nerve fibers that remain, allowing them to conduct signals more reliably. It may be that they could act as bridging nerve cells. So a cell in the brain talks to one of these transplanted neurons that then talks to a cell in the spinal cord. That's sort of the holy grail, and we haven't yet got evidence that that occurs even in the animal models, but that's what's being worked towards.
How can veterans contact you?
They can certainly contact the Atlanta VA and get connected to the case manager of the Spinal Cord Injury Clinic, Kim Whitmoyer. They can also go online to the Shepherd Center website, where most of these research projects are described under the Spinal Cord Injury Research section, and they can find many of the ongoing research projects there.
Any extra cost to the veterans?
No, the research programs are either free or, in fact, they may compensate you for your time, depending on what the procedures are that you have to go through. For some of these projects, we have to do a little bit of stimulating and recording, and that involves putting electrodes on and people getting a zap here or there. And for that, patients are compensated. The silver lining to some of the research work, our current VA-funded research grant on locomotor training, for instance, is that it's an access to additional gait training that patients wouldn't otherwise get. So I don't mind not paying them for the rehabilitation time and simply for the time when we're actually collecting data.
Do you have any words of encouragement you would like to pass along to our veterans?
Well, I can say this. It's a difficult burden, but there's probably never been a better time in history to have a spinal cord injury, because the number of people and the number of dollars that are committed to working on solving this problem has never been greater. We have more biomedical technologies and more scientific lines of investigation than ever before. I am hesitant to say that we will cure this in a decade or in 25 years or anything like that. This will probably not be a silver bullet kind of approach. We won't have some penicillin moment when we figure out, oh, we only need one drug and it's all going to get fixed. But I think that we're adding the pieces together, and it'll probably be some combination of retraining the nervous system that remains, reorganizing it or regenerating part of it, and perhaps using external technology linked to the nervous system to return function.
We would like to thank Dr. Keith Tansey for joining us for this month's edition of ViaGARS. The Atlanta VA Rehabilitation Research and Development Center of Excellence for Visual and Neurocognitive Rehabilitation, CVNR, and the Atlanta Office of the Birmingham Atlanta VA Geriatric Research, Education, and Clinical Center, GREC, proudly partner with GARS to reach veterans and their loved ones with information about research and services at the Atlanta VA Medical Center through this monthly broadcast, Veterans Information at GARS. The CVNR's mission is to foster the health and well-being of veterans through uniquely synergistic research impacting visual and our neurocognitive function. The mission of GREC is to improve VA health care delivery to effectively meet the medical, psychological, and social needs of older veterans through research, education, and clinical services with a special focus on mobility, palliative care, and incontinence.